It's Lucy's? Okay, well then never mind. And from the bottom of my heart, thank you all very much for being here. And I don't mean to be rude, but can we do the stuff with Roy afterwards? Because right now we have an incredible closing speaker to cap our weekend off. So without any further ado, please let me welcome Laura.
Hi, my name's Laura, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Hi. A little nervous, and thank you so much, Jeff, for asking me. I haven't been at this party until this morning, and I wish I could have been, but I have a 12-year-old and a husband. Yay! And so there was soccer and lots of other things. But in the past, I have come to the birthday parties, and I remember way back coming and knowing that the birthday party was just a lifeline for me. I needed it so much. I needed you. I needed all of this so much, and I still do. I came into Overeaters Anonymous on May 3rd, 1988. My first meeting was at 3rd and Flores. It was a two-speaker meeting. Ida was one of the speakers, who some of you know. And these women talked about eating the way I ate. And I couldn't believe what I heard. I couldn't believe that they binged and that they snuck food, and that they threw it away and then went and got it out of their garbage. I couldn't believe that somebody could say that out loud to a room full of people where there were even men in the room. So, because that's what I did. I believe I'm a compulsive overeater from the get-go. I think it's in my DNA. As the years have gone by, I don't really wonder much about it anymore, thank God. I quit the debating society. All these cliches that we learn in here are so true. One day at a time, easy does it. You will recoil like from a hot flame. I mean, I don't want to spend half an hour just reciting cliches, but my mother was not nurturing. She was pretty narcissistic. She loved us. She still does, but she really could not give me a lot of what I needed. Now, did I need more than a normal person? I have no idea, and it doesn't matter now. I know that a big part of my personality is I always want more. I want more. It's just normal to want more for me. I want more. So I use food to cope. And it really worked for a long time. It helped kept me together. I was a functioning compulsive overeater. I achieved a lot. I graduated high school when I was 16, because that was my identity, to, I guess, be smart. And I remember thinking I was fat when I wasn't that fat. So I definitely had some issues around that. I basically never felt good in my body. I look back a little. I didn't have a mother who would help me through that. So it lasted a long time. I came into OA on that May 3rd, 1988, where two guys were standing out front. Some of you may know their name. Henry was one, and Matt was the other. And I was wearing black stretch pants, and thinking, oh, I can't go into a meeting where there are men about food. And I came in, I heard stuff, I couldn't believe what I heard. I thought I'd try for one day not to eat sugar. For one day. The concept of one day at a time was completely foreign to me. I believed I knew what to eat, and I did at that point. I was 35 years old. So I'm now 58, and in these rooms, I don't say it so loudly and proudly out there in the real world, but in here I do, because my life I mean, I feel better than I've ever felt in my life, physically and emotionally and spiritually. I mean, I have my days, but overall. And there is no way I could be here, this person, without Overeaters Anonymous and therapy. But one without the other for me didn't do it. I had very good therapy, and I was honest in therapy even, and I couldn't stop eating. So I was a person who, by the age of 35, had done enough dieting to know what to eat and to know I wanted to be thin more than anything in the world, because I knew if I got thin, I would get a boyfriend and I'd get married and I'd be happy. I had very definite ideas. And I've learned that thin is not necessarily well. I was thinner than this for a time in program, in abstinence, and completely obsessed with not eating a little more. Maybe if I bike rode a little longer, then I could eat that. You know, so I know the disease from, I've never been anorexic or bulimic, but the obsession of even when I've been thinner. And these days, for the most part, I'm quite free. There is one food that reared its ugly head a couple weeks ago. And it's do we talk about food? Name food? Yeah. I mean, it's an innocuous food. Yams. What's wrong? Yams are healthy. They're good for you. Yeah. And I'm a carbohydrate sensitive person. That's a fact. I've learned that. I accept it now. I accept it. I don't fight it anymore. I can't eat what a lot of people in program can eat, and I don't fight it anymore. That's the miracle. But these yams, and then they started to get bigger. Well, literally, I would buy the biggest yam, you know, I could find. And then, you know, I'd make some for my husband, but I'd want the skin, you know, the obsession. I want the skin, and then it's the butter. So I'm calling my, you know, I've been calling my sponsor. I said, this is, and I really had a lot of freedom the last year or so with, and so for now, I'm willing to not eat yams. I'm not saying I'm never going to eat yams again, because I think they're a healthy food and all that, but it's obsessive, and the butter. So there you go. It comes at me sometimes from left field, and let's see. So I ate over my feelings. I ate over anxiety, depression, happiness, success, and I didn't think compulsive overeating was a disease. As I was trying to say, I thought if I knew what to eat, I should be able to. And there were a few times in my life up till the age of 35 where I did lose the weight. I've kept off about 40 pounds. And I'm completely convinced that if I weren't in OA for the last almost 23 years, I don't know where I'd be. I knew I couldn't control it anymore. It was going up there, down, up, whatever you want to call it. And it was horrible. And it was promising myself, today's the day, the last day. I'll finish up this binge because tomorrow's the day. And tomorrow came, and sometimes it would be till 5 o'clock that I would not eat. And then I hit the machines, hit the places on the way home, the donuts, the 7-Elevens, the this. And I couldn't, when I met somebody through work, and we met for dinner, and she said, when she was ordering, is there sugar or flour in this? And I said, why are you asking about that? And she said, I'm allergic to sugar and flour. Well, I have allergies. I'm allergic to cats, and I'm allergic to some fish. But sugar and flour, you know, what's that mean? And so she told me, and she said she was an Overeaters Anonymous, and she said she hadn't had a chocolate chip cookie in 5 years. Well, I thought that's absolutely impossible. And she told me about meetings, and she told me about the first step, and I thought she was crazy. And when she got to the second step, I thought she was really crazy, and the third, forget it. God, forget it. I basically believed in my father. You know, he was a self-made man, and I didn't really believe in myself. I partly did, but I believed in him more. and I certainly didn't believe in a higher power and in God, because that's weakness. I am so grateful that through these rooms I found God, a higher power. I can't define it. It's something other than me. And the big relief that comes when I tell a sponsee, or I tell myself, I'm not in charge. I learned in here, we do the footwork and we leave the results to God. You know what freedom that is for me? That means I'm not in charge of the results, including how much I weigh. You know, you've talked to people, sponsees, who say I've been abstinent and I haven't lost weight, or I this. I don't know when you're going to lose weight, how much you're going to lose. I can't control how much I'm going to lose and when. I have learned in my life, thank you, God, that God has his, her own timetable. Completely. And I have experienced that God's plans are better than mine. I didn't believe that for many, many years. And I mean, I don't always 100% believe it, truthfully. I can't sit up here and go, yes, well, but my experience has shown me. And so the relief that came from admitting that I'm powerless over, and I started with sugar, I'm powerless over sugar. My life wasn't unmanageable. I had a career, so it wasn't unmanageable. I have come to learn that my life is very unmanageable without the steps and God. And you know, when it talks about in the big book, fear of losing what we have and not getting what we want, that's what it comes down to for me. Fear of losing what I have and not getting what I want. And when I'm into that fear, I want to eat, I want to control you, I want to control my husband, I want to get mad because they're not doing what they should be doing and he's not acting the way he should, and neither is she, and neither is she, and neither is the relative. And so I work the steps, and I talk to a sponsor, and I pray to let go and let God. In my experience, I've done a few four steps, and the first one was really scary, to write about how I ate, which I was so ashamed of, binging with my girlfriends at college after smoking grass and then binging and laughing and binging, and then going into the bathroom stall in the dorm and eating more candy bars. Because I, even though we binged, I still had to have more. And I had to do it. And to eat in a bathroom? Like, what was wrong with me? So the first step was really scary. I mean, the first fourth step was very scary, to read all this and to read about all these feelings and all this other stuff. And then to have a sponsor who wasn't my friend. She was actually pretty tough. She was in Pacific Group of AA. And she was the one who taught me to take a commitment at a meeting and make a meeting my home meeting. And I said, but I don't need to do that because I'm a responsible person. I'm not one of these, you know, compulsive overeating flakes or alcoholic flakes. She said, this is what I do, and this is, if you want me to sponsor you, this is what you need to do. So I got to that meeting at 3rd and Flores at 6:30 for an 8 o'clock meeting and set up chairs. And I am grateful for that. Because when I... the night that I ate, and I was abstinent, because my abstinence has always been no sugar. I have food plans, and that's another story, but the bottom line abstinence has been no sugar. And thank you, God, it's been since May 3rd, 1988. But the night that, you know, I was abstinent for a couple weeks, and then I had 7 sugar-free fudgicles for dessert. You know, I think they were, I don't buy those anymore, but I think they were 30 calories each at the time, so it's only 210 calories, but I had 7, and I came to the meeting, and I didn't want to come to the meeting, because I had sort of veered off my diet, and I talked, and I came to the meeting, because I had a commitment at the meeting, and I somehow got it. I took it seriously, that even though it didn't make sense to me, I did want to have what they had. So I thought, all right, I think I was really desperate, and I'm grateful I was really desperate. Because who wants to do this, really? Who wants to set up chairs and go to 3 meetings a week and do all this other stuff? So I came and I spoke to somebody about those 7 fudgicles, and I told somebody that I ate them, and he said, if it looks like a duck, it is a duck. And I never forgot, and I thought, oh, so I guess I'm probably not supposed to be eating the sugar-free fudgicles. Which doesn't mean somebody else can't eat them, but I don't eat that stuff. It looks like that, it is that to me. And I used to eat half gallons, so I have freedom from that. Did I want to be that person? No. I didn't like it when I heard up here somebody saying, who was thin, saying, she doesn't eat this, she doesn't eat that. I thought, who wants that? I don't want that life. I really want my cake and eat it too. That's what I want. Well, how do you get willing? I don't know. I really don't know. I go to this big book study. This man named Herb gives it in Santa Monica, and he talks about what comes first, willingness or grace. I don't know. My experience is that I keep coming to meetings. I keep my eye on the ball. The relief that comes from surrender is huge. It's a relief to stop fighting it. And I do really believe I have a disease now. I have an obsession of the mind coupled with an allergy of the body. And when I don't take in those foods that send off the obsession going and the phenomenon of craving, I didn't believe in that. But when you read in the big book about the phenomenon of craving, that's me. One bite of that sets it off. And then if I don't have the allergy of the body for some of the things, I can still get obsessed. And if I don't get obsessed about food, I can get obsessed about other things. So that's why I really need a higher power. And how much time do I have left?
13 minutes and 22 seconds.
Okay, let's see. All right, so I'll tell you some of the miracles in my life, and I do think they're miracles. My sister hated me. I had a terrible relationship with my sister. She's 2 years younger than I am, and I was the controlling older sister, and I was the controlling older sister, but I wasn't that bad. Or maybe I was. And she also had some mental illness, so that exacerbated things at times. My sister and I, well, she just slept over at our house last night. We played Scrabble yesterday before my husband and I went out, and we talk every day now. She had gotten very sick with depression and very sick a few years ago. And as I said, I've always been a responsible person. And I'm pretty self-centered. I am. I care about my friends. I have the huge capacity to care. And I love my friends. And I've always been blessed with having very close girlfriends. But I really looked at a lot of, you know, what are you thinking of me? It's all about me. But when my sister got really sick, I had learned in here about service and taking the high road and being of service. And I helped her tremendously. And I think God helped me help her. And she got better, and then this turnaround happened where we have this amazing relationship. I had tried, once I got abstinent, I wanted it all. I wanted abstinence, I wanted thinness, I wanted a husband, I wanted a family. I didn't care so much about a big house or a really expensive car. I now have a big house, I don't have a really expensive car. But I wasn't into that so much, but I wanted the family. And so I went on a lot of dates. I did a lot of footwork, a real lot, and was leaving the results up to God. And things were not happening in my timetable at all. And the biological clock was ticking, and it wasn't like I was asking for something unreasonable. This is something many women want, and it's not so unreasonable. And I tried to get pregnant on my own. I mean, with a, you know. I wasn't asking too much, was it? Yeah, talk about powerless. Anyway, so... and that didn't work out, and that was terrible. And then I ended up adopting, and I don't. And this is, you know, a huge journey, as anybody who's been on any of those roads knows. And it was big, and it was hard, and it was. And God wasn't doing what I wanted Him to do, and nothing was right. And I would go to meetings during that time, and I'd hear about the sixth step. And the seventh step, and you know where they talk about in the 12 and 12, you know, the people who wanted children and don't have them, or who had children and lost them, and how do you maintain your faith during that? How do you maintain? And the answer was not good enough for me. I found that empty at the time. I thought that is not enough. And actually, when people would say abstinence does not guarantee anything, it doesn't mean you're going to get what you want. I didn't like that. But I found relief in that too. I don't believe abstinence gets you anything. There are no guarantees. I mean, it's just my belief, but there's no guarantee. So I tell you these miracles though, because I do believe in miracles. Because I've seen them, and I've experienced them, and I've experienced coincidences. And I kept coming back, and I kept my eye on the ball. And my food got messy during those times. I've not been a perfect eater. I never went back to the sugar, and I stopped eating flour a number of years ago. But, you know, those blue corn tortilla chips were sure good, and in big portions. And I don't eat those anymore, you know. But I could only do what I could do at the time. I couldn't, and I gained some weight, and I talked to people about it, and it was horrible. Because it was felt like almost losing abstinence, even though I wasn't eating sugar. But I found I can gain weight not eating sugar. And I can feel completely, you know, back in that feeling that you have when I'm not connected to God. And for me, abstinence is my ticket to God, and God is my ticket to abstinence. So I know the feeling when I've overeaten and what it does to my mind and to my spirit, not to mention my body. But I was depressed, and I couldn't get out of it. And I thought, you know, and I heard in program, my worst day in abstinence is better than any day before I got abstinent. And I didn't feel that way, because I felt so disappointed and depressed and sad and hopeless that I didn't feel that way. But I never left. And somehow I never went back to sugar. And I kept writing, and I kept talking to my sponsors, and I kept working the steps. And so I don't know when I gave up the tortilla chips or the nuts. You know, I try and then I didn't and all that. And then it evolved. And so I ended up adopting a boy at birth. And that was the greatest thing I'd ever done. And second best became best. And I don't know why it happened that way. For all I know, with the genes in my family, maybe it was a blessing. I mean, I think it was. Of course, it's, you know, the script is not written yet. Who knows? But whatever. And then we met the man who's now my husband. What are the chances? I'm not saying it's a, you know, you get abstinent and you get the whole thing, but this is what happened. So, and I'm still a compulsive overeater. And I still go to meetings, and I still have to work the steps because I can find something wrong with anybody. And I can sure find something wrong with my husband. Regularly. People just don't do what I want them to do when I want them to do it. And so I still have a lot, I'm changed. I'm a completely changed person. No, I'm not completely changed. I'm changed tremendously. I am a very different person. And I can laugh at myself in a way that I never could before. And I don't take myself as seriously as I did before. When I used to, I remember saying to Terrell at one point, you know, after 5 years, and I was having trouble with something, because I always have trouble with something. I'm actually much more comfortable having trouble with something. I like having problems. It's a problem. So he said to me, wait until you're older. Wait until you're around 10 years. And it was a relief, too, because this is, I get it now. I really do. It's been 22, almost 23 years. You can only get there when you get there. You can only see it when you see it. But I'm grateful that I had a bottom line abstinence through it all, because it wasn't starting over. And I knew very black and white what my abstinence was, is. It's no sugar. Then there are other levels of what foods and red light foods and yellow, and you know, I loved hearing that in the other meeting that I was listening to, that when they're starting to eat their yellow light foods, what do? I don't, you know, you try and you keep talking about it, and that's what I did. And so I'm extremely grateful, obviously. And I couldn't do this program without you and sponsors and God. And I think there's so much love in this room. When I was hearing Jeff talk about all the work that everybody's done to make this party happen, I think we're the best people, really. Big hearts. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Laura. We really appreciate your coming here. Now, don't leave yet. We're going to draw prizes.